Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
What's left of Conference USA? They were like picking up like high schools in North Carolina last time I checked or something.
SI's Russ Dillinger.
I'm cooking a tomahawk ribeye tonight on the grill. Maybe I'll just put it in the blender and see what happens.
And SI's Pat Forty.
Nebraska people, they're like elephants. They never forget anything. And they're very happy to live in the past, mostly because the past is a lot better than the present.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod. And I got to tell you guys, just for the fun of it, I went back and listened to Scott Frost's introductory press conference at the University of Nebraska.
That's quite an artifact.
I mean, it's on YouTube. Not that hard to find. Didn't have to dig it up. This wasn't like, you know, getting like Mac Brown's first one or whatever. Who's the oldest coach now? Is Mac Brown the oldest coach?
Yeah, I think so. 75, 74, I think so.
Solich retired at Ohio.
Yeah.
Mac, okay. Yeah.
Saban's now extended till 79. I hope for his sake he's not coaching at 79.
Well, that's true. Although if anyone could do it.
Yeah, I'm not ruling it out.
Not a great idea.
Not ruling it out.
Not a great idea, but I don't want to, you know, don't hold it against him. Jeez. But anyway, Scott Frost took over Nebraska, and this press conference was... they're always positive, right? And they got the boosters there cheering, and there were 100 lettermen that met them at the weight room. Everything looks great. But, I mean, man, was this a revival. Nebraska had lost its way. It had been bumbling about with different coaches. It had the aforementioned Frank Solich doing a fine job, but 9 wins wasn't good enough. Then it had Bo Pelini, and, like, 9 wins wasn't good enough. Then it had a variety of moves, and finally they were able to lure Scott Frost back. He had been a 2-year starter. He's from Lincoln. His mom had been the track coach there. He said he literally grew up on the campus. He had led them to a national title as a quarterback, gone 13-0. He'd gotten into coaching. He had led Oregon to the offense coordinator to the national title game. He had taken over an 0-12 UCF team and led them to, at the time of this press conference, 12-0, but soon to be 13-0. Everybody wanted them. They got them, and they were quite excited, as they should be. And Scott was excited, and he talked about, just as long as he had this one line in there, he says, it's my hope that returning this to its roots and maybe me coming back, we can get that passion pointed in the right direction. When that happens at the University of Nebraska, this is the best place in the country to be. He did stuff like, they asked him if he had a worry about it. He goes, I don't have a worry because I know we're going to do things the right way. We're going to do things in a way that people in Nebraska will be proud of. We will not win every game I coach here. We are going to lose a few. We might make some mistakes, but I know the people are going to be behind what we are doing here because we're going to going everything the right way. Do things at the right moral compass in a way that are make Nebraska proud. And there was just great confidence in all of that. And I would say that in many ways they have done all that. There is unity.
Different kind of unity, perhaps.
There's also 4-8, 5-7, 3-5, 3-9.
Yeah.
And now the start this week, playing Northwestern in Ireland. Pat, what the hell happened?
I'm not 100% sure. I'm surprised. I thought Scott Frost would work well. You know, I thought it was a great hire. Florida was interested in Frost. Some other people were too. He was a hot, hot commodity, and they paid a ton of money to bring him home. And, you know, whatever he had going for him at Central Florida, I don't know whether Mackenzie Milton made him a great coach. Or some of the other guys there, Shakeem and Shaquille Griffith on defense, but it has not translated at all. They have been sloppy, error-plagued, can't win a close game. I looked this up today. He's 5-20 at Nebraska in one-score games. Like, if it's close, they'll blow it. That was all of last season. They just found ways to blow games. So I am very surprised he's in this situation. I'm also surprised he's getting a fifth year after 4 straight losing seasons. Very few places in the Power Five are going to give you that, especially in a place with Nebraska's history and expectations. So we'll see if he can turn it around. Northwestern was very bad last year. They trucked Northwestern. One of their few wins last year was just killing Northwestern. So maybe they get off to a good start for once and build on that. But it's pretty shocking to me.
Well, that's a wild stat. 5-20 in one score games? Yeah. And he's lost 29 games in 4 years. So 20 of his 29 losses came by one score. It's incredible. They have played some really close games, and for whatever reason, the fourth quarter either have a dumb turnover or a dumb penalty or two, and just don't come out on top. But, you know, when he was hired, I feel like there are a few of those coaching hires that when they happen, you're like, okay, that's going to work. Like, that's, man, it's as close as the guarantee as you can get. That one strikes me as one of them. So does like Tom Herman at Texas. Like, it struck me as, God, it's close as guarantees you can get. And they just, the coaching hiring cycle, whole thing, continues to teach us that it is a crapshoot, that it is just that we know nothing. The athletic directors know nothing. Nobody knows anything. It's just a roll of the dice, except for like three people who you could hire and automatically know that it's going to work. So it's just that one felt like a guarantee. And for whatever reason, it hasn't worked out. And I was shocked too that he's getting a fifth year. And I'm shocked to hear from people up there that if they win 8 or 9 games, even getting maybe to that eight win mark, that he will probably still, stick around. So I guess that's quite like Dan said, that's his opener was about commitment and all staying together. They do seem to be on the Scott Frost train. They want this team to work.
Yeah. They still love him. And look, losing shouldn't make you not love him, but he had decent recruiting right away. He has not lately. They're still behind him. And I think Nebraska, has had such a long run of waiting for something good to happen. And then the passion is so intense. They've sold out the first 3 games of this year. So that's coming off of, consecutive or basically 4 straight losing seasons. And they're still going to sell out every game. They're already sold out. It's like the fans... At some point, the program is just the fans have each other, right? They don't have a whole lot other than each other.
That's a good way to put it.
He's one of them. And so he fits. He obviously has not gotten enough talent, but he's gotten enough talent to be in all these games. I mean, they played Oklahoma and Ohio State and Michigan all really well last year and just can't put it away. So I don't know what it is. One thing's interesting, you brought up other people wanting him. That 2017 end of the year coaching carousel yielded 3 of those hires that I think all of us thought, okay, that's going to work. One was Scott Frost in Nebraska. The other was Dan Mullen at Florida.
Yeah.
Comes over from Mississippi State, where he'd already been successful and had already worked in Florida. So, I mean, how is that not going to work? And then Chip Kelly at UCLA, where he's coming back to the Pac-12. Where he'd been super successful at Oregon and now was sitting on all the players he was always trying to get out of Los Angeles. And none of them have worked.
And Florida interviewed all 3.
Yeah, sure did.
They were all 3 in the Florida search. Yeah, that was a crazy search. And yeah, you're right. I guess you could say that Dan worked the best as far as records in division titles, and he's the first one to be fired.
Yeah, it's true. It's wild. And he was the 3rd choice at Florida, right? I know Ross did a great story on that search. Was it last year or the year before? I don't remember. And, they really wanted Chip Kelly. I think they were a little more lukewarm on Frost. But if Frost had said yes, they probably would have snapped up Frost. But Dan Mullen gets the job. And, yeah, I mean, everybody thought Dan Mullen was great there. And then, I don't know, I still think, like – during the pandemic, Dan Mullen just kind of lost his mind, it seemed like to me. It was like he just kept saying and doing weird stuff, and then it almost seemed like he didn't even want to be the coach at Florida, and finally, he wasn't the coach at Florida, and it is surprising. Chip Kelly is at least going the right way, right? I mean, his records are getting better. It's taken a long time, longer than anybody expected, but they're going the right way at UCLA. Scott Frost hadn't been able to turn the corner yet.
The weird part was, yeah, I mean, Mullen starts 10-3 and 11-2, and then 8-4 during COVID, and it did start really falling apart, but they did win the division.
Yeah.
And then last year, it just starts going sideways, and there was not patience, and he was not recruiting well, at least to the level of Georgia.
That's yeah. right. And he wasn't saying wise or smart things publicly too, you know, especially yeah. about recruiting. Yeah. He really stepped in it a few times, and it's almost like I compare what like his 2021 kind of to Ed Orgeron's 2021. Like they both, it seemed like in a way that they both were kind of like, eh, you want to pay me everything to leave? Go ahead. And they did.
Yeah.
They did. It combined $27 million or 17, seven, no, Ed got 17 and Dan got around maybe 10. Pat, do you remember? I don't know, something like that. Eight to 10.
I don't recall, but it was plenty.
So, I mean, yeah, $25 million between them or so. So I think they're okay. They're doing good.
Yeah, they're fine. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe this ran out of gas. Chip Kelly has been a weird recruiter.
Very.
And I mean, he was dreadful the first 3 years at UCLA. 3-9, 4-8, 3-4, and then 8-4. And much of that 8-4, you know, breakthrough season was because they beat Ed Orgeron at LSU.
Yeah, right. Established some momentum there.
Right. But I don't think they're firing him. I just don't think there's that passion there. I mean, you can rank the passion play there. That Mullen got canned with a winning record and the other two of losings, but he has at least have the 8-4. I remember, you know, kind of the big thing was Harbaugh got hired, you know, a little before Frost, but there was the, how come Scott Frost and Harbaugh can't make it work? And the Harbaugh people would rightfully push back and say, hey, hold on now. We're winning 9-10 games a year here. We ain't winning no 3.
Yeah.
Okay. So, we didn't beat Ohio State, but, we're not totally stepping in it here, and we're recruiting your Rashawn Gary's and your Aiden Hutchinson's and your guys that are going to do this. So a totally different ball game, but I don't know. I don't know what I will say this. Frost to me has not lost any of that passion. If you listen to him this summer, you listen to him this week, he's fired up. He says, sounds like the same guy. He's ready to roll. He loves his team. I don't know. Maybe this whole culture or, you know, the whole concept just doesn't work if you keep making those little mistakes, or they're just lacking the game breaking, who can we win with guy that can take them over the top. And I don't know if they have that this year. I mean, there's always the belief of how does Nebraska ever win? How the hell did they win in the past?
Right.
You know, they won because pre-television, your budget was defined in large part by how many tickets you sold. And so they had a huge budget.
Yeah.
And they had better stuff, and they invested in weight rooms and possibly stuff that aids people in weight rooms.
Possibly.
Possibly.
Yeah.
And they did things like, I remember they, you know, like they got guys to stick around the summer, stuff that now just isn't natural, right? No one ever goes home. But they get them summer jobs around Nebraska, or the guys would, you know, apply on their own and just happen to get a job. I'm sure they showed up for every hour that they were paid. But, you know, they had all of that. They had this culture and they was winning. And then they were able to supplant that with some skill players and they made it work. But since they've gone to the Big Ten, they haven't been any good. And they're the ultimate cautionary tale for these conference movers. You're going to make some money. But they're just, you know, they don't have an Ndamukong Suh, let alone the Johnny Rogers kind of players anymore.
Oh, no.
And they need some game breaker somewhere that can make something happen. And I don't know if this is it. I don't know if they can get there. But they still have this guy that if you listen to that press conference today, you'd be like, yeah, it's the right guy.
This is a Hail Mary season for Frost, and they approached it that way. I mean, he totally tore up his staff. They went into the portal. You know, they are trying everything they can to get to a winning record. And it'll be fascinating. I talked to some folks, Big Ten Media Day, Nebraska Media, They say 6-6, he's gone. 7-5 is kind of the breaking point. Maybe, maybe not. If he's better than 7-5, yeah, they're probably keeping him. So we'll see what happens. I mean, they brought in Casey Thompson, quarterback from Texas, who had some good games and some bad games at Texas. Then it turned out he was playing with a torn up thumb most of the season. He got that surgically repaired. Frost says he's throwing it great now in August here. But everybody always looks great in August. We'll see what that translates to. They're just, you know, this is we've talked about it on the podcast. I think these first four games are absolutely vital for Frost. And starting, boy, I mean, the most important game ever played in Ireland, right? I mean, in terms of a guy's coaching future, I don't know whether you can fire somebody in August. But they're there, and then they come home for two. They should absolutely win against North Dakota, Georgia Southern, and then they host Oklahoma. And that'll be a big yardstick. That's a game, obviously, still means a lot to people in Nebraska, because Nebraska people, they're like elephants. They never forget anything. And they're very happy to live in the past, mostly because the past is a lot better than the present. And playing Oklahoma riles up people in Nebraska. So bringing the Sooners into Lincoln, even if there's no red helium balloons, will be a big, big Saturday for Frost and for Nebraska.
You know, Nebraska, there's a lot of the programs out there that all their good stuff that happened to them is 15 to 20 years ago. And there's a group of those teams. And Miami, you know, is one of them. And maybe Tennessee is another. And some would even say USC, although that they have more recent success. And then there's Texas too. So like all these teams, and you know, I kind of wrote about this a couple weeks ago, but like all these teams also have another similarity. They have gotten into the NIL game better than anybody, and their collectives have been as ambitious as any other collectives. And Nebraska is the same. They've raised a lot of money, and I think they've distributed around $4 million this past year to athletes, mostly, I'm sure, mostly football players and basketball players. And you wonder if all that money is going to turn into wins. All that NIL cash is going to turn into wins. And we'll see. The Texases, the Texas A&Ms, the Tennessees, USC's, Miami's, and the Nebraskas, they've all done it. They've all done it more ambitious than pretty much everybody else. So we'll see if it turns into victories on the field.
So you think they're going to recruit better because they haven't yet?
Yeah. Hopefully for them, it's coming.
Like,
right?
What do you're really tied into a lot of the NIL talk. Like we've said, even before NIL went full collective, like this is the place that will benefit the most.
Yeah.
Fan passion, ergo money, and an aggressive dollar, not the waterfall in the locker room dollar. Nebraska's got it. And even just legit, the truly legit commercial, the Adrian Martinez is the biggest star in Nebraska the last 4 years.
Yeah,
because if you're the starting quarterback, you're the in Nebraska, you are the hero of a state, and you can do legit ads. What, the coldest has got that air conditioning?
that's the greatest NIL deal yet.
Terrific.
The coldest Crawford is the guy's name, and so he's repping an air conditioning company. It's beautiful.
And enough people around the state of Nebraska know that they have a guy named DeColdest on their team.
Yeah.
And it's funny and it works. So that's legit, you know, whatever he's getting paid, that is truly what NIL. But even if it's the shadow NIL, inducements, guardrails, Nebraska should have that. So money solves the distance problem. Because their problem is you can't get enough great athletes in the state of Nebraska, let alone Iowa and Missouri and all that. And those other programs are doing fine. I mean, if you're just a kid growing up in Iowa, you're looking and going, well, the really consistent, solid place that wins and churns out players to the NFL is in Iowa City. It isn't in Lincoln. And so, I don't know. Are you hearing that they're even more active with players up and down the roster there? Or, because it's not panning out in who's committing right now. They're like 14th in the Big Ten right now.
Yeah, I just looked up some of their recruiting rankings. Their current class is 44th nationally. 0 5 stars, 2 4 stars. And then, of course, last year's class, I think, was like 44, like finished like 44th. So knowing what they're doing with NIL, it does actually surprise me that they're not better in that category. I feel like they did pluck a few portal guys. I mean, Casey's one, I guess. Casey Thompson's one, but I do feel like they plucked some portal players. I feel like they got a guy from LSU as well. But
yeah, receiver, I think.
Yeah. you're right. The commitment list is not pretty, and you got to wonder when that's going to change, because all these NIL collectives at these schools that we were just talking about, you know, they are doling out money to current players, hoping that recruits see that and sign with them. And it's working at a lot of those places. You know, we see Miami has signed an incredible, like, portal class and transfer. They're getting the transfers. And A&M signed the best class in the history of college football this past year. And Tennessee signed a pretty good class and is getting incredible transfers. And USC's whole team seems like it's high 4- and 5-star transfers out of the portal. So Texas signed a great class and signed like the best offensive lineman class that we've seen in a while. So it's happening at these other places. It's actually weird that it's not happening at Nebraska, where they are spending some pretty good money on NIL.
I wonder if recruits just figure that it's a dead staff, you know, and maybe if, I mean, if they do turn it this year, they get a winning record, then maybe the NIL stuff really gets the train rolling after this. But there might be a wait and see situation for recruits.
Yeah, because all those other schools, none of those coaches are like on the hot seat. A lot of those are new coaches, you know, first year coaches.
Yeah, that might be it. I mean, it's still going to play a role, but it just seems like, you know, look, if they had gone out and gotten one of these top quarterbacks that perhaps, you know, NIL played a big role in, you know, Nika Iamaleava is going from California to Tennessee. Dante Moore is going from Detroit to Oregon, as other reasons to take those jobs. But let's say they get one of those guys. Frost is sitting in a lot different situation right now because he's got something to point to and he can't point to the recruiting. And I'll put it this way. If I'm on the right now, they are very unified at Nebraska. I do believe that. But if I'm doling out money and we're sitting there getting beat in recruiting by right now they're behind Purdue.
Yeah.
And I'm I don't know if I got a big lot of corn. I'm a corn magnet. I'm dropping my money on players and we ain't getting them. Not too happy about it. So big game, obviously, this weekend, Nebraska. And I think we've discussed this before, but this schedule, Anita mentioned some of it. I mean, it's back heavy, back loaded. Minnesota on the 5th. Minnesota could very well win the Big Ten West, and then at Michigan, Wisconsin, at Iowa.
Yeah, they don't play a true road game till October 7th. I mean, they've got a chance to get off to a good start.
No Ohio State, no Penn State on this,
right?
So from the East, they get Rutgers and Michigan. So they've got a chance. They can get rolling, but they better get rolling and deal with that Oklahoma thing. Quick game of would you eat it from what was a terrific Max Olson piece at The Athletic on Adrian Martinez, who transferred to Kansas State, which I did not know. One of the big reasons is his girlfriend is a soccer player at Kansas State.
Hey.
Yeah, I mean, I was like, he's K-State. It's kind of interesting switch. Now I'm like, I got you. Nice. Good job. Little did they know we'd pick up a great football player. So he had a broken jaw last year, which has been news that's been out. But after the surgery, he could not, or after he first broke it, whatever, he could not chew. So he's on a liquid diet and he was losing weight. And so here is the question. He adjusted to an all liquid diet before settling on routine heavy on eggs and protein shakes. So then apparently got a little bored of that. So he, quote, tried blending a steak and consuming it like oatmeal. Blending a steak. This is such a Nebraska thing if you just put some corn in there. Quote, it was one of the worst things he's ever eaten. He tried again adding au jus and olives to the recipe. Didn't help, he said.
No, that seemed to make it a lot worse.
Oh, my goodness.
Blending a steak?
Liquid steak.
What the F is that?
I'm cooking a tomahawk ribeye tonight on the grill. Maybe I'll just put it in the blender and see what happens.
Don't. No, do not. honor the cow.
That's it's not the worst thing I've heard about people eating this week or drinking. If you we all saw the person who used a hot dog as a straw, right? But still, I think a liquid steak sounds absolutely horrifying. I could not do it. I would not try to do it. But God love him for at least thinking he would like a steak. I can understand that, but not in liquid form.
How much do you crave a steak that you would eat it? I mean, that dawned on anyone ever? Did Adrian Martinez invent something?
He might have. That might be his claim to fame. Forget quarterbacking. He's been rather up and down at that. But he might have broken a new culinary ground with the blended steak.
Then he goes like beat Bobby Flay and just throws some olives in there. It's got to be like a Calabrian chili or something with Bobby Flay, but like somehow makes it work, right? Like tries to. Well, that didn't work, but I'm not giving up on the blended steak.
Why? Yeah, what? I mean, like, if you're going to put something in, why olives? Why?
Yeah, that's a weird choice.
I would think, yeah, maybe more like some barbecue sauce.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm going to say no one would eat it. Anyone want to eat that? No.
No.
Mm-mm. I'm going to take Adrian's word for it.
Yeah. It's state fair time at Kentucky, and I know they've got some weird stuff on the menu, but they do not have blended steak, to the best of my
knowledge. Yeah.
USC had a linebacker. Shoot, you know, he ended up playing. He's probably still plays in the NFL, and his name is escaping me. I met with him like 3 or 4 years ago out in L.A., and he was on to, in order to consume meals quickly and consume more of them, he would blend everything. He never talked about steak, but he blended chicken breast, and he blended sweet potatoes as well. And so this shake would be this orangey type greenish looking color. And no kidding, and he showed me this. He ate so many blended sweet potatoes that the bottom of his feet and his palms started turning orange, which is a thing if you eat a lot of sweet potatoes. Yeah. It's wild. Yeah.
Yeah. That. And along those lines, and I promise not to hijack the whole podcast here, but our oldest son was born. He got a low bilirubin count, as they said. And so he had to sleep in a suitcase with a light on him. And then we had to feed him the Gerber sweet potatoes. And eventually his nose turned, the tip of his nose turned orange.
Porter Gustin was the USC linebacker.
There you go.
Porter Gustin. Yep. Yes. Yes.
He's a good player.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, earlier in the pod, I said that Mac Brown, poor Mac Brown, said that he was 74. He turned 71 later this week, actually. So I was off by a few years. But he still is, I believe, the oldest coach, right ahead of Nick Saban. And then they're both ahead of Herm Edwards, I think, barely. That's the pecking order, I believe.
Okay, old coaches. They had this show, ESPN2 had the show on Tuesday night, Portraits. Seen this thing?
No.
It's kind of nice. They spent like a half hour with Mac Brown, like Mac and Sally. Sally said, I wasn't going to take the job. Sally said, let's do it. I can't do much without Sally. Sally, she compliments me. Sally said, throw the ball. It was good, though. It was good. They were showing all these super cool Carolina swag, like the Nike gear, the Jordan brand. Mm-hmm. And how he's got stuff that you can't buy and all. It's kind of Mac Brown, like jonesing out about like sneakerheads.
Hey, there's few people really who's better at being more charming in a half hour sit down than Mac Brown.
He is the nicest man. I was going to see him once when he was at Texas, and I was down in San Antonio, and I'm driving up to Austin. You know, supposed to be there at 11 o'clock. We're going to meet. So I left early. Like, I'm going to be there by whatever, 10, right? Park, all that. Give plenty of time, hang out with the SID and stuff like that. And a 18 wheeler full of sand. Seriously, a 18 wheeler, which this is how I heard it. Jackknifes and tips over on that highway. What is it? I-35?
Or whatever. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And we come to a stop. Like, we're not, there's no like getting around it. We're just all parked. People are getting out of the cars and they can't see. Like, we're backed up and they've got to get this thing tilted up and then they got to move the sand or something. So I'm screwed. So I call up there and I'm like, I don't know, right? Like, I'm sorry. I hate to be late. It's embarrassing, but I'm screwed, right? Yeah. So John Bianco, their great SID, is like, okay, yeah, I'll tell my. So I'm sitting there, just, you know, nothing to do, sitting there. And all of a sudden, like 10 minutes later, the phone rings and it's Mac. And he's like, we're watching this on TV. they got the Channel 6 copter over. Holy hell, look at all that. He probably didn't even say hell.
No.
Look at all that sand. You see, you just get up here when you get up here, Dan. Don't worry about it. I'll make some time for you. You know, about 80% of the coaches have been like, F you, come back next month. Yeah, I don't care about your sand, you know. He's like, you're stuck. There only one way. Only one. I was like, this is the nicest guy ever. I'm like, this is not working. So
media, and
I got there. I got there. We had a nice visit. A nice Tell you visit.
What, nowadays,
good visiting with you.
Nowadays, I-35 is a parking lot even when there is not a jackknife truck.
Yeah, that's true. That is true.
It's a disaster in Austin.
Leave plenty of time. Leave plenty of time. The other really interesting, I don't know about really interesting game this weekend, but we're going to go with it. We're going to over.
It's week zero interesting, like, you know, the old phrase.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Week zero interesting.
When there's two girls in the bar, you know, the second best looking girl is automatically pretty good looking because there's only two, right?
You got that. Right. Right. Low quality creates high quantity, I guess.
High demand.
Yeah. High demand. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Supply and demand. And the supply is Wyoming's at Illinois. Yeah. We're not going to pick these. I don't think the race for the case starts next week.
We should at least pick Nebraska Northwestern.
All right. Nebraska Northwestern. Well, we could pick them, I guess.
Let's pick like three games.
Okay. We'll pick them at the end.
At the end.
This is the serious in-depth discussion.
Can't be clogging it up with picks.
The planning again. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, actually, it's not that bad. I'm kind of excited for some of these. Anyway, Wyoming's at Illinois. Illinois is given 11 on that. Brett Bielema is the coach at Illinois, as we all know, trying to get it going. We all think that's what we did last year. I don't know if we'll speak for Ross. Thought that was a pretty solid hire by the Illini, but this is not going to be an overnight thing. He signed one of my favorite recruiting classes of all time, the most Brett B recruiting class. It had 7 offensive linemen and 3 tight ends in it.
Half the class.
That coach ground and pound. Terrific. That's his class.
Terrific. Man.
What you going for there, Roach? Tremendous group. We'll see. A lot of potential. 7 offensive linemen, 3. And I don't know. Did he get a quarterback in this group? I don't know. I got quarterback. Oh, yeah.
He doesn't need a quarterback. He doesn't need a quarterback, Dan. Yeah. He'll be fine.
One QB. It was like the Cliff Kingsbury where he signed 24 guys and 19 of them were on offense. Yeah. When he was at Texas Tech. I want to go a little heavier there on the D-line there, coach. I don't know.
Yeah, shockingly, he was fired and went basically 6-6 every year.
Yeah.
With Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yes.
He kept losing 63-56.
Yeah.
He had Patrick Mahomes and couldn't win. Anyway, at least he doesn't do the drafting in Arizona.
Yeah.
Any observation you have on Illinois football, and it's quite possibly the last time we mentioned Illinois football this season.
Yeah, I went to the opener last year against Nebraska.
And they beat them. It was a big win. I mean, we declared it a huge moment for Illini.
Oh, yeah. Not huge moment. Nah, they went 5-7. But that was the thing is, like, okay, they were 5-7, but their wins were all, like, that one was just kind of a throwaway win against Charlotte. But you beat Nebraska. You upset them in your first game of your tenure there. Get people very excited. You win at Penn State in that just disastrously horrible 9 overtime debacle where nobody could gain 2 yards when they had to just go to 2-point conversions. And it was just like, no, 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 no. And then finally somebody got 2 points. They won at Minnesota. Big upset. They were 2 touchdown underdog there. And then you beat your in-state rival, if it's such a thing, at Northwestern. You pound them at the end of the season. So that's like if you're going to go 5-7, that's a pretty good way to do it.
And their losses, touchdown at home to UTSA,
yeah,
which everyone was upset about, but that was a great San Antonio team.
Right.
They lost by 3 to Maryland and 4 to Purdue.
Yep.
And a touchdown to Rutgers.
Right.
You know, you swing that around and we got a whole different ball game. Those three. Forget San Antonio.
Yeah, they were in every game except really 2. You know, they were pretty much in right there in every game. Wisconsin, I think, Wisconsin took it to them. And
They like couldn't move the ball at all.
Yeah, in Virginia. But they could really, you see their schedule this year. I mean, legitimately, they could start 4-0, heading 4-0 into a game at Wisconsin. You know, Wyoming at Indiana, Virginia at home, and Chattanooga at home. I mean, that at Indiana game will be interesting. But, you know, you could see the Fighting Bretts start off at 4-0 and have an interesting game on October 1 at Camp Randall.
Yeah, they'll have a chance. They went to the portal for a quarterback. They got Tommy DeVito, who had been at Syracuse. They've got Art Sitkowski backing him up, and you know the former Rutgers QB, who he came in and actually helped them win that game against Nebraska last year that I was at. You know, we'll see. They are remaking the offensive line, but that's Brett's specialty. So we'll see if they get the big uglies up front and can actually just run the ball at people. And then we'll see on the other side if they can stop it. They've got a really good defensive coordinator, Ryan Walters, who I think is a rising star and will be a head coach. And he's on the way up. So I think they've got a chance to at least get to bowl eligibility. As Ross said, you got a chance for a hot start possibly before reality hits, and you can do some stuff.
That late October Nebraska game kind of stands out as kind of a swing.
It does.
So, Wisconsin, they have a Wisconsin, Iowa, Minnesota 3, and then they still got Michigan and Michigan State and Purdue. They have Michigan State, Purdue, you know, but yeah, they get the 6 wins. Hey, that's a nice season for them. And I still do think they're probably going to get there. All right. A few quarterback info. Looks like the backyard brawl, West Virginia Pitt, is really going to be a USC quarterback depth chart battle.
Yes.
Keaton Slovis starting for Pitt. JT Daniels starting for, we presume, has not been announced, West Virginia. Thoughts on the Californication of the backyard brawl?
Yeah, and throw in Graham Harrell, the offensive coordinator at West Virginia.
Oh, and that game is not this week. I don't want to get people excited. That's not week zero. We would have led with that. Yeah, next Thursday.
Yeah, so this might be our best chance to at least talk a little bit about it. Yeah, it's wild. I mean, the QB diaspora from USC, where you had JT Daniels transfer to Georgia and then to West Virginia. Slovis ends up at Pitt, and Jackson Dart ends up at Ole Miss, where he will probably be the starter. I don't know whether that's been announced there yet. And Caleb Williams goes in to USC and brings Pitt's wide receiver, Jordan Addison, with him. So a lot of moving pieces there. You know, all these quarterbacks at one point in time looked great, right? I mean, like JT Daniels had a phenomenal freshman year at USC, and then he hadn't been able to stay healthy. Slovis replaced him after Daniels got hurt the first game of his sophomore year. He looked great. Then he had some arm issues and some other injury stuff. And then Jackson Dart stepped in and had showed some real flash last year too. So, I mean, Clay Helton did a lot of things wrong there, but recruiting quarterbacks was not one of them because they had 3 different guys that could play.
It's hard not to get a good one in Southern California, man. If you're in Southern California, you would think you should have a good quarterback. It's interesting that you got these Southern California quarterbacks meeting in Pittsburgh, which like actually historically Pennsylvania used to be the place to get a quarterback, and maybe still to an extent is, but California like maybe years ago kind of took the quarterback recruiting crown over from, I think for a while historically it was Pennsylvania. The intriguing thing about this game too, away from the quarterbacks, is obviously the rivalry series, which I'm in the middle of writing about and will be at that game. But it is just, you know, they haven't played in 11 years, Pitt, West Virginia. And obviously it's the 15-year anniversary of the 2007 game, which has still left everyone in that state of West Virginia, all 1.8 million people, scarred forever. It's just calling around, talking about that rivalry series and that and that game brings out quite a bit of emotion. So this one will be slam-packed. It's sold out. I heard that they had just 200 or 300 standing room only tickets that sold within, they told me, within 3 minutes of the game selling out. So it'll be quite a scene in not Heinz Field, but whatever it's called now.
I'm so glad they're playing, and I think it's awesome as a season opener. You know, yeah. First time in 11 years, and that's one of those rivalries where they do not like each other, and there are legitimate, you know, like cultural differences between Pitt students and West Virginia students and the fan bases and everything. So this is these are the kind of games that I am glad to see being played.
The Pitt people tell me that in order to get to Morgantown, you have to swing by vines. Country versus city. I love the rivalries of country versus city. It's great. The city folk and the country folk.
Disrespecting that public transportation system that we discussed.
That's right. Yeah.
A couple weeks ago.
That's state of the art people mover. Yeah.
Totally disrespecting that. Looking down their nose. Well, look, the big thing to me with this is Pitt and West Virginia have a similar problem, as they're basically located in Big Ten country and they need local kids to want to play at their schools. And those local kids have not just options, but Penn State and Ohio State options. And particularly West Virginia is basically Western PA. They need to play and make these events that some kids are going to say, I want to be a part of that. Because both programs are desperate to keep Western PA kids home. And Pitt obviously has done an outrageous job at high-end talent staying. Aaron Donald, Darrell Revis, stuff like that. And just recently, I'm not going to go through the whole list. I mean, you go to Marino and all that. But both programs have to get that. And this is how you build that. You build that up. It's going to be an event, right? It's an absolute event. The media in Pittsburgh is all about it, and a huge scene in the city of Pittsburgh, and everyone talking about that is just imperative when you're basically crunched between these two behemoths of Penn State and Ohio State. So not that they're going to beat those schools for top five stars, but maybe you get those guys that pop up for you.
I think they figured that out too, that, you know, especially West Virginia, I think they figured out, you know, we got to play some of these neighboring schools and these rivalries and rekindle some of this. You know, they got Maryland on the schedule. They got Penn State on the schedule. I think they open with Penn State maybe next year. They obviously have Pitt for a few more games. They just re-upped, I think, four more games with Pitt to kind of keep that rivalry going. So we're obviously another whole topic of discussion, but with realignment and the grab for money and media rights deals, we've gotten away from a lot of these geographic kind of cultural matchups and rivalries. And you know, as West Virginia athletic director told me, Shane Lyons, you know, when first thing he did when he got the job was basically give a call to Pitt's AD to get this game on the schedule, because the closest that a West Virginia fan can drive to get to a conference game is Iowa State.
Yeah, no, it's nice. I mean, that's always been just the brutal part of that whole conference setup.
At least they get Cincinnati now.
Yep, yeah, that's right.
Yikes. Right.
Yep.
But yikes. Now, that will help them, though, in recruiting Ohio and all of that. I don't know how competitive West Virginia will be in this game, but sure would be good for Neil Brown if they were.
Yes. Yeah. He needs it. Entering year four and just treading water. Exactly 500. So.
Big year, big chance for a statement. I mean, he did great work at Troy, but hasn't gotten it going yet at WVU. But again, very difficult circumstances for the Mountaineers, just conference wise, and so this is a start of that, and we will see another quarterback announcement. Kalen DeBoer up at Washington announced that Michael Penix Jr. Will be the starter. The Indiana transfer did some great stuff at Indiana. Also got injured, but he's had a full off season to get going. So that's a real kind of X factor, I think. How good is Penix Jr. again?
Yeah, huge X factor there. And that, I mean, he was one of the big stories of the pandemic year in 2020. You know, he played so well then for Indiana. He scored the touchdown that Dan Wetzel refuses to acknowledge beat Penn State.
His knee got down. A great effort, but no, wasn't a touchdown. Penn State won
the officials' arms went up in unison and called it a touchdown. So there we go.
Penn State won.
he was phenomenal in defeat against Ohio State, threw for like 490 and five touchdowns. You know, that whole year, he was outstanding. And then, yeah, he got hurt the next year. He got hurt at the end of the 2020 season and then got nicked up again in 21 and just was horribly ineffective. And so we'll see, if he can kind of reconjure his career there with Kalen DeBoer, who was the offensive coordinator early in his time at Indiana. So they might be able to get something going together.
Congratulations on or in order for Nick Saban. He's going to remain employed. You know, it's good to see a guy be able to keep his job. We want employment out there. He has signed a contract to 2029, as Pat noted earlier. I get you to 79. It makes him the highest paid coach in the country. What's the average? 11.3. I think at 1 year he gets to like 12.3.
Yeah, it's similar to 11. But that'll be
at the end. If it actually gets to that point. I mean, like if they don't extend him,
yeah,
kind of weird.
Yeah, please don't get to that point. Don't be coaching when you're
79. Talk about hard recruiting. We have not extended our 79-year-old coach. So I don't think it's going to get to that. But anyway, Kirby Smart bumped over him to be the highest paid coach because he beat him, and then Saban now returned favor. So he's the highest paid coach as he probably should. People were a little outraged. Nick Saban is underpaid.
Yeah, I mean, look what he's done for that school. Are you kidding? Not the football program, the school.
No, the school and the city. Yeah, I mean, the county, the state. I mean, everything. Yeah, he actually is probably underpaid. Somebody tweeted, I think it was Darren Rovell, tweeted out the average, like the tuition, the average tuition for an Alabama student. It's around like 27,000 or something like that. And Nick Saban makes 28,000 per day.
That was in state. Yeah.
Yeah. In state.
So 365 kids pay his salary. Deal.
Yeah.
First, I didn't know how it worked. It's one of the dumbest.
That was a silly
My stat. Head freaking hurt.
Especially look where Alabama's out of state enrollment has gone straight through the roof. And one of the reasons why is, hey, it's fun to go to school down there and watch your team kick everyone's ass in football.
The front porch of university.
We just talked about it. It's like we talked about it for Bama Rush. It's almost 58% out of state. They're paying. First off, it's all athletic money. The athletic department last year made $6 million in surplus, something like that. And Saban was paid $7.5 million. So even after paying him, they had surplus. Something. I don't know what the number was, but it's just the whole thing's just painful. The guy's worth like $40 million a year to the Alabama, maybe more.
Yeah.
Not even kidding. I mean, it's like when they do the NBA. I remember this with the NBA, like someone being like, oh my God, LeBron's making $35 million. And someone's like, that guy's worth $350 million a year to the NBA.
Right.
Like Taylor Swift sells out. Everywhere he goes, they sell out the arena. If Taylor Swift does that, she makes $300 million.
Yeah. Right.
It's the whole thing was like, whatever. Saban, well worth the money. Is everybody? No, not necessarily. The waste is not in high paying Saban. Did you see the Florida, the picture? You counted up, didn't you?
I counted it 140 support staff versus 116 players were in the photo. Now, Billy Napier's already came out and said, we included everybody, which you had to imagine that they probably did. Managers, everybody that you maybe wouldn't normally include in a team photo. But still, still, there's roughly at least 100, if not 120 or so true support staffers. If you eliminate like the managers and the water boys and all that stuff, there's still a ton. And that was his goal going there, right? I remember him when he was at UL and he interviewed for all these big jobs through the years, it was always that he asked for a lot with in all these interviews. You know, and a few ADs just kind of like recoiled because he asked for so much. And this is what he asked for. He wants a Kirby Smart, Nick Saban support staff system. He's got it, clearly.
And that was a team photo. The Florida Gator team photo had all these non-players in it. Many of these are well worth it. Sports psychologists, nutritionists, trainers, all of these things. could make a case for all of them, but it shows the growth of this sport is more on that. I don't have either, even not paying the players that didn't bother me. Now that they get out of the way and let them make as much money as they want, I don't, right. I don't see the moral problem with it anymore. I don't know if I did before, but you could certainly be like, oh, this is ridiculous. Guy's making $12 million. This kid's making tuition. But Bryce Young can go out and make his money. Will Anderson, go make money. You're not, you don't have to pay him, but get out. Don't stop it. The guardrails go away.
Right.
And this is your solution to never having to pay him. Right. Don't share the revenue, yeah. But sit there and say, make as much as you want. And so if the boost, if Alabama or Ohio State or all these places make all their money on media rights and the players make it all on boosters, hey, so be it.
Sure. I mean, raises all boats, but it is. It's just, it's funny that to think, like, again, you talk to old coaches and like, they really need that many people. And Dan, you're probably starting to find out now, you know, when your kids start getting mailers from colleges and they're like, 15-1 student to teacher ratio. We have a great, you know, in Florida football, it's 1-1 staff to player ratio.
Yeah, 1.2-1. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's an enormous operation. It really is. Do they need that many? No. Do they need that many coaches? I mean, NFL staff always crack. I coach the outside linebackers. Like, there's two of them.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
You watch Hard Knocks. You're like, what is that? You got two guys.
That's where
I'm the tight ends coach, right? There's only a couple guys. Like, what are we doing?
The recruiting support staff. Every time I hear. But all these guys like, oh, my God, you know, the hard thing about coaching in college, you're just constantly recruiting. Well, are you? You've now hired 23 recruiting assistants to do all the mailing and the Snapchatting and the TikToking and everything else for you. So how much recruiting are you actually doing? I'd like to know.
And you know what happens at these places is a recruiting assistant gets coach's phone. And they're the ones a lot of the times DMing and texting these players. And,
absolutely.
You know, players are pretty oblivious. But, I mean, I've been in the room where that happens, where coach's phone is handed over to analyst or recruiting assistant, like a 19-year-old kid, and they're DMing this recruit acting as the coach. It's insane. College sports.
Yeah, and a lot of the recruiting, too, is like, images, videos, right? Like, and then the operations of these unofficial visits now. Someone's got to polish up the gold throne, all the different stuff.
Oh, yeah.
It's absurd. It's absurd. College Sports Inc. goes and goes and goes, and that's why you can no longer have USC play in the Pac-12.
That's right.
Again, you had this line last week, I think, Ross, like, where's the extra 30, 40 million going?
Yeah.
What exactly do you need the money for?
Yeah.
Right. Better you start already saving have up every to, facility.
Better start.
What are you doing at Iowa? You just got 30 million more.
Better start saving up to pay players when the courts say that they're employees. That's what a lot of ADs are thinking. But to put that somewhere in the bank.
Yeah. And meanwhile, the ADs are also terrified that the donors will stop donating.
They're losing a revenue fund. All right, this will be the first picks. It's a week zero race for the case. If you're not a regular listener, where the hell you been? But we do have a contest at the end. Somebody wins a case of beer.
That's right.
And
picks against the spread, season totals.
So we'll do a quick one this week. Northwestern at Nebraska. Cornhuskers giving 13.5. Game is in Ireland. Pat.
Yeah, this is the race for the non-alcoholic case, you know, like the
O'Doul's,
the Coors Cutter or whatever. Yeah, O'Doul's. There you go. This is the race for the O'Doul's this week.
I think they drink a lot in Ireland.
Well, they certainly do. But since what, like, we have to decide if we're counting these in the standings for the season.
Just pick three, though.
Okay, we'll pick three. 13.5 is a lot, but I'm going to say Nebraska gets untracked, gets going. Northwestern was such a horrible offensive team last year. I mean, they could not throw the ball. They got a running back who can run. They got a really good offensive tackle, maybe the best offensive tackle in college football, Peter Skoronski. Could be a first-round pick. But I'm going to say Nebraska gets it together and covers the 13.5. They won by 49 last year. I think they can win by 14 this year.
Man, 13.5 is a lot. I'd You almost convinced me, Pat. But I think I'm going to pick Northwestern. Give me the points, and I'll take the Wildcats.
For reasons I'm sure to regret, I'm picking the Huskers. I have no idea why. Yeah. I already hate the pick.
I do too. I mean, I hate the pick. But we'll be watching that game like it's the damn college football playoff championship because it's football.
I don't like watching MLB, so there's nothing to watch. And I can't watch NFL preseason. So I'm in a tough spot right now. I'm in a tough spot in life. So I need football, and I will consume this game with great excitement.
Absolutely.
Go Wyo, go. At Illinois. Illini giving 11. Sneaky little game here. Ross?
That is a sneaky game. It's also a lot of points, too. Man, that's a tough one. I figured I would definitely pick Illinois. I didn't think the spread was going to be that high. Give me the road dog to cover. Give me the road dog. I'm going to take another dog here.
All right. I'm taking the Nye to cover. I think they punish them. Wyoming only has 8 starters back from last year, according to Phil Steele. 4 on offense, 4 on defense, and they weren't that good last year. They were 7-6. So I am gambling that there's not a lot for Craig Bohl to rely on there, and they're going to get run over by the Illini. Ground and pound Brett. They're going to win and cover.
I'm going Illinois. Oh, boy. Wyoming had a ton of transfers. Everybody left.
I know.
Everybody left. They've been training at altitude. They're going to come down and breathe that heavy air.
There you go.
Champagne. I don't know.
We're both laying double digits on teams that had losing records last year.
I don't know what I'm doing, and I'm picking with you. This is just.
Yeah, I know. You are leaving That's me out on the loan, man.
You're lone dogging it. All right. I will mention this game, but we're not picking it. We're only picking 3. Nevada at New Mexico State. The return of Jerry Kill in New Mexico State. Probably the single best pound-for-pound hire in all of college football this year.
It really might have been.
Jerry Kill's a hell of a coach, and he took the worst team other than UMass in the whole country.
He was that desperate to be a head coach again.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Absolutely incredible hire by New Mexico State. They have Jerry Kill. They're going to get good. They're going to get respectable. I don't know how good you can be as an independent in Las Cruces, New Mexico, but we're going to find out.
If I were New Mexico and UTEP, their backyard rivals there, I'd be worried.
Soon to be in Conference USA, right? Soon to be.
They are getting in Conference USA, whatever there. That That's right. entails.
It's like, really? You want us? Oh, wow. Things must be bad there.
What's left of Conference USA? Yeah. They were like picking up like high schools in North Carolina last time I checked or something. Charlotte Christian or something. Did they join Catholic? Anyway, proud history of Conference USA. Still there. Still exists.
Conference DOA, as it was referred to more than once.
Conference MIA.
Yeah.
It's like the Ask Jeeves of conference. hell, let's pick it. Nevada at New Mexico. New Mexico State, I'm sorry. New Mexico State is getting 9.5.
Wow.
A nearly double-digit home dog.
Against
Anyone
Nevada?
Know anything about either team?
Nope.
Yeah, I mean, Nevada lost their coach, Jay Norvell, up and left to go to Colorado State and replaced by it. That just feels like one of those comfort hires to me. Maybe it works out, but Ken Wilson, who has spent 19 years on Nevada staffs previously, going all the way back to the Chris Ault days. So I'm not in love with the nostalgia comfort hire. They got 2 starters back on offense. 4 on defense. Nevada is susceptible. They're vulnerable. Jerry Kill will cover. Aggies.
What's the spread? 11?
Nine and a half.
9.5. Yeah, give me Jerry Kill too. I'll go with that as well.
100%. I'm taking that. I mean, look at this record. I mean, great in 1AA at Southern Illinois. He went 10-3 at Northern Illinois. He get 2 8 win seasons at Minnesota. The health issues got him, but other than that, 2-2 last year, filling in a TCU. Jerry Kill, baby. Let's do this. All right. Then finally, we'll go with the their I-10 rivals. A big week zero is big down there in the Rio Grande Valley of West Texas, South New Mexico. North Texas is at UTEP, down in the West Texas town of El Paso, home of the river they call the Rio Grande. Loyal forever, we're standing together. Onward to victory, orange and blue. We will be true.
Yeah, we gotta indoctrinate Ross to Wetzel's UTEP fandom.
I'm a big Miner fan.
Oh my God.
Miners are at the Sun Bowl, one of the greatest stadiums in all of college football, and they're getting 1 point. Ross, who you got?
I heard it. Yeah, I heard it. I want to say the AD came out and said it sold out, or it plans to be sold out, the Sun Bowl. An electric environment Saturday night down there. Give me the Miners at home.
I'm going to go with you. North Texas looked like they were absolutely headed towards a coaching change. And then Seth Luttrell kept his job. They won a bunch of games at the end last year. They won their last five to keep his job. Not, you know, that's a nice little springboard, I suppose, into this season. But Dana Dimmel, guy who also has been around a bit, just did a very nice job last year with UTEP. Got his quarterback coming back, Gavin Hardison. So I'm rolling with the Miners, although I do enjoy picking against the Miners when Dan picks them, which he probably will here. But we might be tied to the hip, joined at the hip here.
It's going to be a party down at Rose's Cantina. Let's do it, Miners. Start off 1-0. I love it. Sold out Sun Belt. Sun Bowl is it's incredible. Great stadium. Great stadium. Tucked right in the mountain.
No. Yeah, no, it's beautiful. It is.
Right, so we picked four games.
For the record, did you take New Mexico State and the points?
I did. I'm representing down there.
All right.
God, it'll be huge.
We all picked this. You and I picked the same four. Oh, my gosh. Yeah,
terrible idea. Terrible idea.
Really bad.
History says not good. All right. That's pretty much our show. But I do want to give us one good piece of exciting news as the season is about to start. Chicken wing prices have fallen below the pre-pandemic levels.
Wow. That is good news.
Remember, we were worried about chicken wing shortages and getting priced out of chicken wings. Well, just here on the eve of the season, prices per pound down to 168 in July, best since 2018. Buffalo Wild Wings is trying, they have a half off traditional wings on Tuesdays.
Mm.
They're trying to, you know, because people are going with the boneless, which is just a chopped up chicken breast.
Right.
No. That's... So fire up for the season. The chicken wing is affordable again.
That's huge. And I tell you, if Buffalo Wild Wings is doing that all year, they should partner with the Mac for that Tuesday night match. And, you know,
if
Tuesday night's the half off night, then
half off traditional wings.
Yeah. There you go.
But yeah, BW3. And I did not get paid, nor did I get a free chicken wing out of this. I got half off the second order.
We should.
You got to order one. You got to order, and then there's a half off. Whatever, they're paying me. Whatever the thing is, go in there and harass them. I don't care what their sponsors. Jerks, go to Wingstop. Who the hell are you? I would say the three most important price checks for college football fans would be gas, just dropping.
Yep.
Continues to drop. Chicken wings.
Yep.
And beer. Yeah. I think those would be the three things. So I don't
beer
know
is going beer... up, I'm pretty sure, though.
Yeah. Well, Busch Light's still there for you. Let's go. Week zero.
Play ball.
We will not do an overreaction Sunday, Monday, whatever we do. Right. But we will be back next week to get fired up for week one. So thank you for listening. Continue to subscribe. Tell your friends about us. The season is here. If you want to do the season right, you listen to our podcast every time.
That's right. If you know a few dead people, subscribe them too.
Yep. Let's go. Talk to you all later.